Have you been diagnosed with osteoporosis or been told you need to boost your bone density? If so, you may be wondering about medications for this purpose. So in this episode, I'll explain what you need to know about those medications. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, board-certified geriatrician and founder of the website betterhealthwhileaging.net. And this is the Better Health While Aging video podcast, where we discuss common health problems that affect people over age 60 and the best ways to prevent and manage those problems. So today's episode is a follow-up. In a recent episode, I covered boosting bone density to prevent fractures in later life. This is an important issue that affects most women, but also affects men as well, because everybody's bones get thinner as we age. And if this is bad enough, it's called osteoporosis. And if we're not careful, it can lead to fractures, some of which can be life-changing. So it's important to take steps to counter this thinning of the bones and boost our bone density, ideally starting when we're in middle age, but also it is never too late. Now, in the previous episode, I covered why bones get thinner with aging, and then I covered the best proven lifestyle methods to counter this. And I did also mention medications, but I didn't go into them in depth. However, I heard from many of you that you wanted to hear more about the medications. So in this episode, what I'm going to cover is, first of all, when to consider medications to treat your bone density. And then I'm going to cover the main types of medications that are available to increase bone density, how they work, and the major side effects that you should be aware of. I'm also going to talk about your options if you don't want to take medications for osteoporosis, because I know many people prefer to make do without medication if possible. And then I'm going to finish up with some suggested questions that you can ask your health providers if this is an issue that is coming up regarding your health. So we're going to get started with that. But before I get into it, I have a very quick request. If you're here, you find this interesting, or you've been finding the video podcast interesting, if you haven't yet subscribed, could you please go ahead and subscribe? It would mean a lot to me. It does help me out. It helps other people find the channel when you subscribe, and it does help support the work I'm doing. Another option, if you appreciate my making these videos, is to become a member of this YouTube channel. And to learn more about that, just click the join button under the video. Okay, moving on. So before I talk about the medications, I want to just briefly review how we diagnose low bone density, because that is relevant to then the question of whether or not you should take medication. So the main way we do this is through a special low-dose x-ray that is called a DEXA scan, and you get from that a T-score. So the T-score compares your bone density with that of a healthy young adult of your sex, and it basically reports how many standard deviations below the bone density of a healthy young adult are you. So everyone as they get older is going to be below the bone density of a younger person, for sure. So if your T-score is above -1, so within one standard deviation, that's considered normal for an older person. If your T-score is between -1 and -2.5, so you're between 1 and 2.5 standard deviations lower than a healthy young adult, that is considered osteopenia. And if your T-score is below 2.5 standard deviation, so -2.5 or lower, that is osteoporosis. So there is another way to diagnose osteoporosis, and that is if an older adult experiences what is called a fragility fracture. So these are fractures that happen without a lot of impact, and they tend to happen in certain places in the aging body. So especially the vertebral spine. These are called compression fractures, actually, because the vertebrae will end up kind of crunched down. Sometimes this contributes to people becoming shorter as they get older or becoming more hunched over. But people also get it in the hip. And usually when people break their hip, what they are breaking is actually the very top of the femur bone, the part that goes like into the hip sockets. They're not breaking the, you know, the outer crest of the hip. And then another common spot for a fragility fracture is the wrist. But people can also get fragility fractures in the upper arm, in their ribs, or in their pelvis. And again, these are fractures that happen, you know, spontaneously or due to what's considered small to medium impact. So for instance, somebody falls from standing. If somebody fractures a bone after something that's considered high impact, such as after a motor vehicle accident, that would not be considered a fragility fracture. But when older adults experience fragility fractures, that generally qualifies them for osteoporosis. So the reason that this matters is because for the most part, the medications that I'm going to talk about are generally only recommended for treatment of osteoporosis, not really for osteopenia. So again, they're recommended for people who have had a fragility fracture, who have a DEXA T score less than minus 2.5, or for people who have been otherwise evaluated and it looks like their 10-year estimated risk of a major osteoporotic fracture is greater than 20%, equal or greater than 20%. And there's a special calculator online called FRAX. I'll post a link to it in the episode notes that health providers especially can use to calculate this risk. So if you're considering medications, you should know that in most cases, medications are not routinely recommended for osteopenia or even to prevent bone loss. Now, there are a few special situations. The most common one is probably if people are going to be taking certain types of medications for to reduce inflammation, specifically medications like prednisone. These are called glucocorticoids. They're also known as steroid medications. They reduce inflammation and they can be used for certain autoimmune diseases. So if people are going to be taking those longer term for more than several weeks or several months, then in those cases, sometimes they consider medications for osteoporosis because those medications are known to induce osteoporosis. But otherwise, we don't generally use medications to prevent bone loss. There is another situation that I'm going to mention, which is hormone replacement therapy. So women often experience a significant loss in bone density at menopause because estrogen is really important to maintaining bone strength. And so when menopause causes a quite sharp decrease in estrogen over just, you know, a few years, women experience accelerated bone loss. Now, taking hormone replacement therapy to treat menopausal symptoms does prevent that accelerated bone loss. However, at this time, it's not recommended to prescribe hormone replacement therapy solely for the purpose of preventing bone loss. It's just considered a very nice bonus that you get if you are prescribed hormone replacement therapy to manage your menopausal symptoms or for other reasons. And then a couple other considerations before one starts medications. Before starting medications, you definitely want to work with the health provider to check and make sure that you're not experiencing any causes of what's called secondary osteoporosis. So primary osteoporosis is thinning of the bones due to, in women, menopause plus getting older. In men, it just happens due to getting older. For men, it's really more likely to come on after sort of, you know, age 70s, 80s, because men also experience thinning of the bones for age-related reasons, plus also a drop in their sex hormones as well. So if we're thinking about medications, we definitely first, you know, want to make sure we've checked and make sure that there aren't any causes of secondary osteoporosis, medications, or one of the other medical conditions that can thin the bones. We also want to make sure that an older person's serum calcium levels and vitamin D levels are normal. If calcium levels are not normal, we might want to investigate. There can be some medical problems that cause that. If vitamin D levels are below normal, then we might want to supplement. We actually should supplement and replete them to support the effect of the medications that are going to be building up that bone. And then all older adults, whether they have osteoporosis, osteopenia, or are in midlife, should also really be pursuing lifestyle changes that slow age-related declines in bone density. So I went over these in depth in my previous episode, but briefly, these are exercise, specifically resistance training and impact or weight bearing exercises. That's because your bones get stronger in response to stimulation and kind of mechanical stress. We also want to make sure that we are consuming enough dietary calcium. We want to make sure that we're taking in enough calcium, generally about 1,200 milligrams per day for women. And the evidence shows that it's best to consume as much of that in dietary form as possible, and then use supplements to make up the difference. We also want to avoid vitamin D deficiency. For many people, that will require taking a daily supplement, but usually it's not necessary to take a high dose supplement. 600 to 800 international units a day is often adequate. If you want to hear more about that, I have a video just about vitamin D that goes into this in depth. And then we want to avoid heavy alcohol use and smoking, both of which are known to be detrimental to bone health as well. So if you're thinking about medications, you want to do all those things, and then let's talk about the medications that are the option if you have osteoporosis or if it's been recommended that you take medication for your bone density. Now, as I explain these medications, just so that you can understand how they work, it's important to know that bones are dynamic. So they look hard and stable, but in fact, at the cellular microscopic levels, your bones are engaged in this constant process of regeneration. There's a coupled process of special cells called osteoclasts, prompting the bone to kind of reabsorb the minerals. So they break down the bone, and then osteoblasts that rebuild the bone. And we need to have that process constantly going on. If it stops, the bones actually become brittle and are more likely to fracture. And the way bone density works is that early in life, the creation outpaces the reabsorption process. That's why your bones get denser and denser, stronger and stronger as you get older, up until you're in about your 20s. And then bone density gradually starts to decline in midlife for multiple reasons. Again, menopause accelerates this. And then both sexes experience gradual age-related bone loss in the later decades of life. So it's useful to keep this in mind because as I talk about the medications, what you'll see is that some medications work by inhibiting the resorption process, the process of bone breakdown. So they basically tilt, all medications are working to try to tilt your bone metabolism towards more formation and less breakdown. But some of them very specifically work on slowing down the breakdown, and others very specifically work on enhancing the bone formation. And so the side effects that come with them are sometimes related to that mechanism, which one they have. And now let me tell you about the medications that you're likely to hear about if you're considering medication for osteoporosis. So the very first line of medication for osteoporosis, the most commonly used medications, and you have probably heard of them, are medications in a group called bisphosphonates. These are recommended by experts as the first line, and they include medications like alendronate, bisendronate, and ibandronate. So the brand names there are Fosamax, Actonel, and Boniva, and they can be taken every day, some of them, but what's most common is for them to be taken on a weekly basis. Now, there is another type of bisphosphonate called zoledronic acid. The brand name is Zometa or Reclast, which is given as an IV infusion. This one actually is given every year, usually in a series of once a year for 3 years. So it's important to know that that is also a bisphosphonate. So how do bisphosphonates work? They inhibit, again, that process of bone resorption. And they have been shown in multiple randomized trials to not only increase bone mineral density, but they also reduce fractures. So to give you a sense of how effective they are, you know, one randomized trial, a large trial, found a 5% absolute risk reduction for new vertebral fractures. So people on the medication over 3 years, 11.3% of them had a new vertebral fracture, whereas the ones who were taking placebo, it was 16.3%. Now, hip fractures are less common than vertebral fractures, so the risk reduction there was 1.3% absolute risk reduction. So people on the medication, their hip fracture risk was 1.9% of them had a hip fracture over 3 years, and people who had no medicine, 3.2. So you may be thinking, well, that's not that big. I mean, it's true. This is not going to guarantee you that you have no fracture. But in terms of preventive medicine, this is considered a pretty good outcome to have this much reduction for an event that we are trying to avoid. And then what are the pros and cons? So the pros of these medicines is that they're effective. And actually, even though many people in the lay public worry about side effects with these medications, they're actually considered relatively safe. I'm going to explain why in a moment. And they're also often fairly affordable. They've been around for a long time. They're often available as generics. And, you know, we have a fair track record with them. So what are the downsides? So first of all, especially the oral form of these types of medications is often felt to be a hassle to take. This is a medication that can cause irritation of the esophagus. That's the tube that goes down to the stomach. It can cause irritation to the bottom of the esophagus. So to take it safely, you are supposed to take it, that once a week on an empty stomach with a big glass of water. And then you're supposed to sit upright for 30 to 60 minutes and not eat or drink anything, you know, during that time. This feels like a hassle for a lot of people. And so even though these medicines are effective and relatively safe, we do find that it can be hard for people to stick to taking them for a few years, which is usually what we want them to do to build up that bone mass. And if they don't take that correctly, they can get reflux disease, heartburn symptoms, irritation of that esophagus, or even ulcers. So that's the most common issue that we run into with the oral form of bisphosphonate medications, such as alendronate. They're also not recommended for people who have significant kidney disease, such as a creatinine clearance less than 30 milliliters per minute. If you want to learn more about kidney disease, I have a whole episode about that. And then what gets a lot of media attention at times is the fact that they are associated with a serious side effect or some serious side effects. Now, these are actually quite rare. They're certainly much more rare than getting a fracture due to osteoporosis. And they are, first of all, osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is estimated to affect 1 in 10,000 to 100,000 patient years or occur in, you know, 1 in 10,000 to 100,000 patient years. And then there's also atypical fractures, which are rare, but seem to show up, especially after people have been on these medications for years and years, especially after 5 to 7 years of chronic treatment. And again, this is because these medications are impairing the kind of like back and forth that your bone cells have between resorbing bone and rebuilding the bone. And so when there's that interference for many years, we do see an increase in certain types of atypical fractures. And for this reason, many people feel very cautious about taking this medication, especially if they've had like difficulty with their teeth or other issues with their bones. However, the good news is that if you start this medication, it's generally not recommended to take it for years and years and years. So in fact, the research has shown that after a few years of treatment, the bone protective effects persist for a few years in most people. And so actually, in most cases, for people taking this medication, it's recommended to take it for a few years and then have a drug holiday, as they put it. So generally, if you've been taking the oral bisphosphonate, they will do that after about 5 years. And if you've been taking the IV version, once a year IV, after 3 years, they might take a pause. Now, when exactly to take the drug holiday is going to depend on circumstances. Generally, if you're taking these medications, they are going to monitor bone density. I'll talk a little bit more about that, but usually after a year or two, they're going to check, make sure you're responding to it. It may also depend on like how low was your bone density when you started, because they're generally trying to get you back to the level of at least, you know, they're basically trying to get your bone density up, hopefully to, you know, at least osteopenia kind of level. So when the holiday happens will depend on that, but that is generally what is often done when it comes to bisphosphonates. So just, you know, in terms of the big picture of bisphosphonates, they are effective. Fractures do become less likely after about 12 months of treatment. And what you need to know is that, yes, they are associated with these serious side effects, but those serious side effects are much more rare than fractures. So when we look at the number of people who need to take these drugs to avoid a fracture and compare that to the number of people who need to take these drugs to have a serious side effect, it's a much smaller number of people who need to take the drugs to avoid a fracture than it is to get one of the rare side effects. So if you have osteoporosis, the average person is far more likely to benefit from taking bisphosphonates than they are to be harmed by them, especially if they take the bisphosphonate correctly. And then the other thing to know is that if you're one of those people who is having trouble with the oral bisphosphonate, or this comes up sometimes for people who are older, frailer, living alone, having difficulty remembering to take a weekly medication, the IV infusion can be a convenient option for many people if the insurance is willing to cover. So that is bisphosphonates. Let me now tell you about some of the other medications that come up when it comes to treating osteoporosis. So another type of medication to know about is called a selective estrogen receptor modulator. And the best known example of this is raloxifene. The brand name is Evista. This medication basically acts kind of like estrogen on the bone, but it doesn't stimulate the breast or uterus cells. So this can be especially attractive as an option for women who are concerned about breast cancer risk. It is not as effective for fracture prevention as bisphosphonates, but still does do something. So this is a medication that is sometimes considered. Another medication which you may have heard about is denosumab. The brand name is Prolia. And this is a monoclonal antibody. So this one is not an oral medication. It's a subcutaneous injection given every 6 months, and it ends up inhibiting the cells that reabsorb the bone. It's generally not used as a first-line treatment. It's generally only used if bisphosphonates are not an option for some reason. It does seem to be as effective as bisphosphonates. However, it does not provide lasting protection once it's stopped. And in fact, what's been noted is that when people stop this drug, their fracture risk goes up. So one does have to be a little bit careful and have some thoughtful conversations with the health providers before starting it, because either it's going to need to be taken indefinitely, or what sometimes they do is if people need to stop it or want to stop it, then they switch to a bisphosphonate. And that's to avoid, again, the increased risk of fracture that we see after people stop. And that's when people have stopped for, you know, 6-7 months, right? If you stop, it's not that you're going to see increased fractures a week later. I mean, again, this is a medication that generally is given every 6 months, but it's something to keep in mind. So those are medications that act by, again, inhibiting the resorption process in the bones. And then there are some other medications which are called anabolic drugs for osteoporosis. These are drugs that actually work on the side that is like building up the bone. They are generally not used as first-line treatments. They are reserved for treating very high fracture risk because they are more effective than bisphosphonates, but usually they're used if bisphosphonates, you know, haven't done enough. Sometimes they might be used earlier if somebody has like really profoundly low bone density. And one type of medication in this group, or there's really two of them, but some of these medications work by mimicking the effect of parathyroid hormone. So your parathyroid glands, you have four of them, they're nestled along the thyroid. They release parathyroid hormone, which plays really important roles in bone metabolism and in calcium and vitamin D metabolism as well. So these medications are teriparatide, brand name Fortio, and abaloparatide, brand name Timlos. And these are injections, and they actually have to be given daily. So they are effective in building up bone, but a daily injection is, you know, not a small thing. The main side effect that gets monitored for is that they can cause high calcium in the serum and urine. That's part of what your parathyroid hormone does. And actually, when people have little tumors there, that's one of the signs and symptoms, is they get high calcium levels. So taking this medication can cause a higher calcium level in the blood, also in the urine. It can also increase uric acid and sometimes also causes episodes of low blood pressure. But it does also build up bone. Now, these are not medications that are meant to be taken indefinitely. In the studies, they've especially studied people taking them on the order of 1.5 to 2 years. And so the practice right now is if people take these medications, it would be for 2 years, and then they are switched to a bisphosphonate or another drug that slows bone resorption. And then let me tell you about another newer anabolic drug for osteoporosis, and that is romosozumab. It's a mouthful. Evenity, I think, is the how the brand name is pronounced. So this is a monoclonal antibody that actually has a quite different mechanism of action. I won't go into like the nerdy details right now. It's a monthly injection, and it's the only drug that both stimulates bone formation and also activates bone remodeling in a way that causes people to build up bone still. So in the drug-sponsored study, that was published in 2017, and that was part of the FDA approval, which was in 2019. The randomized trial found that there was it compared people on this drug to people taking just alendronate, and then both groups got alendronate afterwards, which was kind of interesting. But the randomized trial found that this was more effective in lowering fracture risk than just alendronate. So 9.7% of people who got this newer medication had fractures over 2 years compared to 13%. However, they also noted a small increased risk in cardiovascular events. So at this time, this medication is supposed to be used really with caution if anyone has a history of heart attack or stroke. And the general treatment course would be to have monthly injections for 12 months and then switch to a bisphosphonate. So those are the major medications that we use for osteoporosis. So let me now share with you a couple other things that you should know when it comes to medications for osteoporosis. So first and foremost, it is absolutely okay to start medications to treat osteoporosis soon after a fracture. This has actually been identified as an important quality issue in healthcare, is that when an older person comes to the hospital or emergency room for a fragility fracture, for a hip fracture or a broken wrist, they aren't always getting evaluated for osteoporosis and treated for it, but they really should. So now we are trying to do that more. And this has brought up the question, is it a good idea to start medication if your bones are, you know, trying to heal? This has been studied. And the good news is yes. Bisphosphonates can be started as soon as 2 weeks afterwards, and the anabolic medications can be started even sooner. So that's an important thing to know. Next thing for you to know is that if you are on medications for osteoporosis, generally there should be a plan to monitor your bone density and make sure you are having a response to whatever medication they have put you on. So different providers do it a little differently, but you know, generally rechecking the bone density with a DEXA after 1 to 2 years would be reasonable. If the bone density is stable or improved, that's a good sign. Could check again in 3 years. But if the bone density hasn't improved the way we're hoping it would, then we need to consider a change in medication because there are some people for whom the bisphosphonates don't seem to be sufficient. Next thing that I want to make sure you know is combination therapy. So it turns out that when it comes to osteoporosis medicines, we generally don't want to be taking more than one of them at the same time. So this is different from, say, blood pressure medications, where we're often combining them. For bone medications, it has been studied and generally not found to add a benefit. So what is fairly common, however, is to use what's called sequential therapy, where they might use one medication for a certain time and then follow that by a different type of medication afterwards, either because the first one wasn't working well enough, or as I was saying, for many of the anabolic medications, the ones that work by building up bone, you only take them for a few years and then you switch to a bisphosphonate or something else. And then last thing to know about medications for osteoporosis is that these medications generally can be used for osteoporosis in men. The vast majority of the studies are in women. Osteoporosis was first noted as something that especially affected postmenopausal women, but we have come to realize that a fair number of men are affected as well, especially once men get into their 70s and 80s. There are also specific medical conditions that can make men more likely to lose bone loss, especially things related to testosterone levels or prostate cancer as well. So these medications that I talked about, the vast majority of them can be used to treat osteoporosis in men as well. They're effective. The exceptions would really be the ones that are related to female hormones, so estrogen or raloxifene. Those we would not, you know, generally use in men. So hopefully I've made a case for these medications being effective, worth considering. But what if you still feel like you just don't want to take medications for osteoporosis? Okay. So let's talk about your options. So first of all, you can and definitely should lean into those lifestyle measures. So again, exercise, resistance and impact exercise, really important. Making sure you're taking in enough calcium. The more you can do it through dietary means, the better. It's really been shown that, you know, like taking in dairy can make a big difference. Supplement with vitamin D as well. And then avoiding heavy drinking. I mean, probably for your bones, the less you drink, the better. We especially know that it's heavy alcohol use, you know, which is generally like more than 3 drinks a day, that is problematic. But even a drink every day, you know, for your bones, it's probably better to drink once a week or maybe not at all. And then if you are somebody who is smoking, stopping smoking is going to help as well. So doing these things will definitely slow your decline. Whether it will actually like build your bones back up, I think it depends how, you know, probably depends how much exercise and your ability to implement the rest of them, and also on just like the specifics of your body. Now, exercise, you know, the huge added advantage of exercise is that it will decrease your fall risk. And, you know, a lot of this is about avoiding fractures. And one of the best ways to avoid fractures is to avoid falling. So you can go this route and see what kind of progress you make and then ask to have your DEXA repeated after trying lifestyle changes for a year. And I do want to encourage you to reconsider medication, especially if you experience a fragility fracture. The number one predictor of having a fracture is having had a previous fragility fracture. So especially if you experience a fragility fracture or if your T-score remains below minus 2.5, despite your best efforts to use lifestyle measures, consider the medication, you know? Consider taking it for a few years and seeing where you are at. So last but not least, what should you ask your health providers if you are concerned about this issue? So especially if you've been told you have osteoporosis, or if you've had a fragility fracture, or if you've been told maybe you should take these medications, some of the questions I recommend asking, you know, first of all, what are my DEXA results? Can I have a copy of my report? What is my T-score? Do I definitely meet the criteria for osteoporosis? If you do have osteoporosis, could there be another health problem causing low bone density? Have we checked for secondary causes? You're basically wanting to make sure that there's not something other than age or menopause affecting your bones. And then what medication are they recommending you take and why? Bisphosphonates are usually first line. So if that's not what's being suggested to you, I definitely recommend asking a few more questions for the provider to explain to you why they think you should start with one of those other medications. There are reasons where I can be reasonable. It's just good for you to find out what they are, what they see as going on in your health that makes that justified. And then I also recommend you talk to them about fall prevention. I have a video that's just about that, about what doctors should be doing. Because again, if the goal is to prevent fractures, maintain independence, feel good, fall prevention is a big part of that as well. So to recap, if you've had a fragility fracture or a T-score on your DEXA less than minus 2.5, I really think it's worth considering medications for osteoporosis, especially if you're somebody who's expecting to live more than a few years. But you don't want to just rely on medication. I think it's really important to combine medication with lifestyle changes that support your bone density as well. And again, it's bisphosphonates, medications such as alendronate, Fosamax, which are first-line treatments. They're generally effective if you're able to, you know, take them on schedule and fairly safe. If you're having difficulty taking this medication once a week with the water, sitting up and all that, a yearly infusion of zoledronic acid can be more convenient. And then often a drug holiday is reasonable after 3 to 5 years, depending on how your bone density is looking and which medication you are taking. There are other medications available. They tend to be more expensive. Some of them have to be injected, and they are usually considered either if the osteoporosis is really severe or if bisphosphonates don't work out for some reason. And then last but not least, remember that the best fracture prevention is fall prevention. So I hope this has been helpful to you. With that, thank you so much for watching. And if you found this helpful, if you're here on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe. It does help more people find the channel. If you've been listening to the podcast, come take a look at the video. You'll see my key points on the screen. And another option to support my work is also to join the YouTube membership as well. So thank you once again, and I look forward to seeing you all again on a future episode of the Better Health While Aging video podcast.